We did it.
We did it. All one second.
Cool. I feel like I'm going to do the same.
You don't realize how thirsty you get by the time you're like in the middle of one of these things. You're like, oh, I'm dying. I'm running out. I'm running on empty, man. Dude, yeah. Let's just get into it. We're recording, man. Trevor Bell Jimenez, how you doing, man?
How are you? How you doing?
Very good. Just been hanging. I decided I think I'm going to go on a little vacation, staycation kind of thing, you know, with my girlfriend on the 16th. We made a decision, and now we're going to Slow. Trying to get a little getaway in Slow, man. I love Slow. Have you spent a lot of time in San Luis Obispo?
I have. We used to kind of like back in the day play quite a bit with remember Sparrow's Gate?
Bands yeah.
Like that. Yeah. So
I guess we could start from the very beginning. Like, you've been in bands in the area for a very long time in this 805 Central Coast area. And there was a moment when you were in Franklin for short, where it seemed like I was like just turning 18, but I would always see your guys' shows being promoted. Yeah. And it seemed like you, Randall, and Lompoc, like in Slow, it seemed like there was something happening there. Could you give me more insight to what it was, or am I over romanticizing something that I just wasn't of age to see?
I mean, I don't think you're over romanticizing it. I think it was just like a really cool time.
Right.
There was kind of like this like little, like, you know, circuit, I guess, 805 circuit where, right. You know, let's see. You had the Lompoc dudes like Le Petit Protest, mm-hmm. Randall. You know, I'm trying to think if we had any. We didn't really like have too many like Santa Barbara people that we knew.
But there was Muddy Waters. You could play Muddy Waters.
Oh, yeah. We played there all the time. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. That was actually, I feel like it was kind of the like crossroads there or something. Yeah. Like where we all met up, you know? Mm-hmm. But we did a lot of like trading shows. So like the Sparrow's Gate dudes, this band Quiet Life. Mm. I don't know if you remember them at all.
I remember them.
Yeah, they lived up there in Slow. So we would like, you know, do a show up there, then head over to Lompoc, then do like Santa Barbara, and then come back to Ventura, like all on a weekend or something, you know?
That's so crazy. And what was the kind of shows like in Slow? Was it a house show? Was it a bar? Or?
House shows mostly. The Sparrow's Gate dudes had a house. It's called, I think they called it like Under the Electric Church or something.
Nice.
Like that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, we mostly do it there, but then there was like bars up there too.
Yeah, I definitely
Frog and Peach. Yeah. That's what it was.
I talked to Kyle Fields and he talked to me a little about Frog and Peach. Like I got ripped off there once. They're just like,
makes sense.
They're like, yeah, it just wasn't as packed as we're used to. Here's $100 less than what we originally guaranteed. It's like, played for 3 fucking hours.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have anybody. We didn't know. We didn't know maybe we could put an opener or we can play with somebody else. We just thought, well, we have to fill that whole 300 hours then. Oh. Or three hours. Sorry. And it was just like, it was so brutal. Playing covers twice because we didn't have that many songs. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, yeah, just like extended jams or something. Like you're like, all of a sudden I'm in the Grateful Dead.
And like the cover selection is like, all right, you guys like Oasis? I could play some, we could play some Oasis. Some
I think we know Oasis. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. So how old were you when you got into Franklin for short? And when did this whole time kind of?
I'm 37 now.
Right.
Seth Pedersen and I started Franklin for short when I was like 18.
Wow. Fresh out of high school?
Yeah. We were just both out of high school and it was just him and I, mm-hmm. like he played acoustic guitar and sang and then I played the bass.
Cool.
We would, let me see. Hold on. I see the screen doing so. Oh, never mind. It's not. we just like played like all the coffee shops of Ventura County, you know, from
right. The Sandbox. I think that's that's the one close to the freeway. I can't remember the street name. It's like
it's
on the corner. All right.
So we would, you know, from like Ventura to Simi Valley, you know, Thousand Oaks, all that stuff.
Wait, where do you play in Simi? Where do you play in Thousand Oaks? I've never played a show in that area.
I remember playing at like the Boys and Girls Club or something.
Okay, cool.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like, I feel like, you know, I didn't even have the, I don't even know how we did it, to be honest. Cause like, yeah. I didn't even have the internet until, you know, I was in my 20s.
Wow.
You know, like,
right.
And like, when was like MySpace a thing?
That was like, I got on MySpace in 2004.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So 2004 to 2008, it was like a thing.
That makes sense. Yeah. 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 So like 2005, I feel like then it got kind of easier to book shows, you know?
You're yeah. Like, that was the first case.
Find other bands in other towns and all that type of stuff. So we did that. And then we got a drummer, cool. This guy, Victor. Do you know that band, The Missing 23rd?
No, I don't think
I've heard. They're like a Ventura County punk band.
Cool.
And then became a three piece and then, you know, just we kept playing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And were you writing songs also in Franklin or was it just Seth?
Yeah, at first it was just Seth. And then by like the last two records, the last four records, like he and I were like kind of co-writing songs. And then we were just like writing songs separately.
Right. And
combining them, you know.
When did you really start writing? What age did you really start writing?
Well, I feel like, you know, I played in bands, like punk bands and stuff when I was like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like dabbled with it a little bit then, you know. And then I just like, you know, I just got off that train and I was like, I just want to be the bass player. I just want to like stand in the back, you know?
Yeah.
And then kind of, I feel like just like almost out of necessity in Franklin for short, we're like, we need more songs. Let's like write songs. So like Seth and I started writing together.
All right.
And then it was like, then I just was like, I just want to write songs, you know?
Really? Yeah. And was there that moment of like, cause eventually Franklin for short ended, like how did it end? Like, what was that time like for you?
Totally. It was okay. So gosh, it's all kind of like a blur. Right. Like I think like 2010, we kind of ended or 2011. That year we had just like, we went on tour with that band Kings of Convenience.
Oh yeah.
Did like a East Coast stint with them up into Canada. Actually,
was that the first time you'd done something like that?
We had kind of done
like that big and
yeah. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Like being on a bus and all that type of stuff, you know, like staying in hotels and what have you, you know. But yeah, we did that and then came back home and it just kind of like, I think we had just been doing it for so long, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, we started the band 2001. It had been about 10 years. Been doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And we just came back and like nothing was really happening. And I ended up, Tanya and my wife and I, we ended up, we're like, we wanted to just kind of get out of Ventura, you know, try something new. So we moved to LA. And I think that might have like played a little bit of a role. It just kind of got harder. We never even like, we're like, the band's over.
Yeah.
We still to this day never said that. We just.
So is there a chance we can see a Franklin for short reunion show?
You know, Seth and I have like, over the years, we've done like little duo type things, playing like little things, but like never like official, never like, hey, this is, we're going to do a Franklin for short show or something. Just like,
that's cool.
He and I played shows throughout the years and we would like get together and play songs and what have you.
I'm sure that would make a lot of people happy to see that show, man.
Some old school Ventura
SB heads would show up. Yeah. That's awesome, man. So the Kings of Convenience tour.
Yeah.
Like, take me back to that time. Like, how did you get on that tour? Do you know how you guys even got? Did you meet them somehow or?
Santa Barbara connection, actually.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know the Ruby sisters?
No.
Simone Ruby.
Oh.
Danielle Ruby.
Oh.
Simone had a band called Rubies, actually. Cool. Great band. You guys should check it out.
From Santa Barbara?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, Santa Barbara.
Whoa, okay.
She doesn't live there anymore. But she was friends with the Kings. With I think mostly with Erland, and Danielle, her sister, was getting married and they asked Franklin for short to play the wedding party.
Mm.
And so it was, you know, we played up in Ojai at this wedding party and Erland was there, and actually both of them were there.
Wow.
And yeah, they like the band and they're like, okay, you know, sometime in the future, let's like do something together.
Right.
You know? And you know, we're like, okay, yeah, sure. Of course. It was just like one of those, like, yeah. Okay.
Whoa.
And then we waited like a year and then they hit us up. They're like, we're going on tour in the States. You guys want to come with us? And we're like, sure.
That is different than how I think of tours being booked now, where everything's through agencies. It's all of fucking email chain and it's very gatekeeped and it's like,
Yeah. This was just like them hitting us up and just being like, hey guys, you want to, and we backed them up.
You were part of the, you were their backing band?
Not for like the whole set. Cause you know, they're a duo.
Right,
they got the like kind of Simon and Garfunkel close harmony type thing, you know.
Oh, okay.
And so, but they have a couple little rockers, so we would come up and play with them on this.
That's crazy. That's so wild. And so, when did Tall Tales and the Silver Lining start?
So that was like, so Tanya, my wife, and I, we like had a little band, tiny little band called Billy the Kid.
Okay.
And it was like,
I feel like you referenced that in your songs. Are there references? I feel like I've heard that before.
There might be some older songs. Yeah. But we, it wasn't a little band. It was actually like a really big band. It was like
lots of members.
Yeah. There was like nine people. There's like, you know,
shit.
Yeah. I played guitar, sang. Tanya played like the Glockenspiel, percussion. Then we had like a violin player, mandolin player, banjo, saw, drum, all kinds of stuff, lap steel. And so we were doing that. And then a few of the people in that band ended up, they were moving away.
Yeah.
So I had a song for that band and called The Glow. Mm. And I just was like, I'm just going to start something new since everybody's moving away. And so I kind of just like took that song and then going back to MySpace, I started like a MySpace, you know, and like put the song up there and, you know, and then just ended up doing that. And it ended up getting either that song, somehow it like ended up getting written about in like NPR.
Oh, whoa.
And so then I was like, oh, this could be cool. I'm going to just start maybe doing this a little bit more.
Yeah. Is Tall Tales and the Silver Lining such a crazy band name? Like, is that a title you had lying around for a while, or how'd you even get there with that name?
So like originally it was just called Tall Tales.
Okay.
You know, but then, I found other bands called Tall Tales, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was like a gazillion called Tall Tales. So I was like, huh. And then cause it was originally just me, you know? But then I started to kind of build a band around it. So I was like, oh, I need like a band name. And I was like listening to the radio and I heard somebody say Silver Lining. Mm-hmm. There's like Silver Lining. It was like the first time I feel like I'd ever like heard that phrase, you know,
mm-hmm.
I liked it. So I was like, okay. And Silver Lining.
Yeah. The idea of a silver lining is like a pleasant, like, oh yeah. There's even in bad situations, like, okay.
Yeah.
There's something good to take out of this.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that put like a, that became like an ethos for the band almost? Like, even if bad things happen, there's still something positive.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah, for sure. 100%. I feel like that was kind of like the, you know, vibe or whatever.
Right.
It was, you know, just trying to kind of push on. We did it for a while.
Yeah. And you guys had a lot of members also. That band, Tall Tales and Silver Lining, had also lots of people on stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we got that band, that same thing. We got that band up to like 8-9 people at some points, you know. Then eventually towards the end of it, we were whittling it down, you know.
What are some of the difficulties of having that many band members on stage and like just trying to coordinate practices and all that?
Well, it's funny, man. If you've asked any of those people, we very rarely practiced.
Oh, okay.
Like that was the kind of the thing too. It was like, especially in the early days, definitely in the early days. Like it was just like, these are the songs, guys, listen to the record and like show up. If you want to come,
yeah,
it'd be great to have you, you know, kind of thing. I kind of wanted like less structure to it, you know, like just like a kind of a freedom for everybody.
Oh, okay.
But I think like as it developed over the years and like my taste in like pop music became more, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to, you know, tighten it up for
What were you listening to in the in those early years that made you want to have more of a loose, free-form thing?
Well, you mentioned him earlier, Kyle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was like a big, for me, a big game changer. Like, you know, when I first heard like Wonderoo and like Light Green Leaves and Magic Wand, like when I heard those records, man, it was just like, oh. And that was at a time where no internet, you know, so it was like, who is this guy? Like, I didn't even know what he looked like, you know. It was like, so
how'd you meet Kyle? Just playing shows?
Yeah, shows. Yeah, like we had some mutual friends, and then we just like, yeah, just booked some shows together through mutual friends.
And at some point you started playing like drums for him. Is that how he kind of operates too? Kind of like listen to the record.
For sure. I know Tim, who I play with in lines and stuff.
Yeah.
He plays in Kyle's band. He plays like pedal steel and keyboard. Right. I think he's got some mainstays now for sure.
Cool.
But I think like back in the day, that's what I always gathered when like I'd go to see him. Like it was just like, I don't know what the set's going to be. I don't know who's going to be in the band, you know? And I loved that. I thought that was just the coolest.
Right. Yeah. Do you see yourself, well, now that your tastes have changed, like what made you get to more of like, I want to practice a lot, I want to get this shit tight? Like,
I think like, I think just making more records, kind of getting more into like pop music.
Yeah. Like what are we listening to
that time?
Yeah.
Definitely like a lot of like Burt Bacharach.
Cool.
You know, things like that, just really like inspired technically, kind of more, right, a little bit more musical. And I think when we started to kind of like the pressure kind of came on a little bit more with like putting records out, and like needing to like go out and play those songs and what have you, you know, just wanted to like, you know, put something together that could please folks, I guess.
When you say pressure, what kind of pressure? Like pressure from a label, pressure, self-pressure you put on yourself, or?
Probably both, I'd say. Yeah. A little bit of like label pressure. You know, always, they were so nice, you know. We put that record out with Other Music, Fat Possum, you know, last record we did. And you know, they were just like, just incredibly kind, generous, good people. But, you know, coming from a place that was very like kind of free and loose, and then like trying to like bridle that, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, people, you know, we're all have different temperaments and stuff like that, you know?
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I've been doing this. I feel like it's crazy. It's like when you think about like, oh, I started Dante LaFonte in 2010.
Yeah.
I'm 30 now. I spent my whole 20s doing this, and it's like, it's how did you feel when you hit 30? Like, oh my God, I'm still doing this. Like, how long can I maintain it? Like, what kind of advice can you give someone like me? Because once you hit 30, that's like that mark of like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, what's happening?
100%, man. That's actually like kind of around the time that Tall Tales broke up, actually. Yeah. Shortly thereafter, like, that was my first daughter, River, was born when I was 28, 29. And shortly after there, like, I like signed a publishing deal and like, you know, and then we put that record out like a couple years after that. So I was like about 30 then.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I was like, okay, like this could be cool. Like maybe this is something that I could kind of like really do and pursue, you know? And I think, you know, at that time, I just wasn't ready for that kind of pressure or something like that, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
And I think being like a new dad too, like my priorities were there, you know, everything else was kind of like skewed.
Interesting. And, the publishing deal, can you talk, I guess, a little bit more about that? Like, what is a publishing deal for the listeners like listening and for me? Okay.
I don't even know.
No, so
It's with like Domino.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I own the songs and they own the songs and I write the songs and, you know, they hopefully work the songs too, as they have in the past, you know, and
when work them like in for, as far as like commercials.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And like movies and TV shows and stuff like that, you know? Yeah.
That's crazy. I talked to Ron Sexsmith like two weeks ago about that, and I was like trying to pick his brain. I was like, man, how did Michael Bublé sing your songs? He's like, oh, I sent him a lot of songs and he never responded. But then he said he just heard it on the radio one day. He's like, it didn't matter how much I bugged him, he never responded back to me. So I was like, okay, because I'm trying to figure out like how to get into that world, obviously. Like, how do I just write for people, let the really handsome people sing my songs? Like, they'll do better with it than I'm doing.
You're
like,
handsome, and he's well, man.
Oh, thanks, man. So that's what I'm picturing. And then, it didn't really help because, you know, it's always what you think. Like, same thing, Kings of Convenience. How's that happen? Well, separate things, like, you know, this like perfect, it just has to align sometimes.
I think that's what it is, man. It's like sometimes it aligns and then most of the time it doesn't.
No,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy.
So weird.
It's so wild, man. Yeah. Okay, so then you guys moved to LA. You guys left Ventura. You moved to LA. What neighborhood in LA have you been living in, or have you just been flipping throughout the whole city?
Well, we don't live in LA anymore, so we we live down in Riverside.
Oh, nice. The IE.
Yeah, yeah.
Love it.
Actually, one of your Dante Elefantes.
Chris.
Yeah. I remember we played a show, or I went and saw you guys play or something. I ended up talking to Chris about that somehow.
Yeah. But, he's a Riverside boy.
We've been down here since 2015.
That's cool. And how do you like it?
I love it, man.
Really?
It's nice, yeah. It's like, you know, I was actually born down here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we lived here until I was about 10, and then I moved to Ventura, so on and so forth. But,
did you like that? I feel like 10 is a crazy year, 'cause you're like leaving elementary school, going into junior high. Like, how was that transition?
It was like kind of cool. I think it was like, 'cause, well, I was still in elementary school actually. So I was in like fifth grade, maybe I was nine. So like I was able to kind of like make friends for that transition, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it was a little bit harder for my sister, 'cause she went straight in. She was like in seventh grade.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But, man, I love it down here though. It's really like, you know, it's peaceful. It's culturally like really diverse too, which I dig, you know?
Yeah. A lot of people are heading over to the IE now that like,
we were just reading about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are buying up houses and what have you. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You see all those flip shows on, I don't know if you like those shows on HGTV where they like flip houses and shit. They're always like in the Inland Empire. They're always like in that area just buying houses and flipping, making them fix them up.
We've been kind of looking around a little bit, and it's getting pricey right now.
Yeah. That's the whole fucking state, man. There's nowhere there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
How wild, man. Okay, so, but you guys originally moved to LA first.
Yes. Yeah. So we lived in a Glassell Park, like Highland Park, Eagle Rock area.
Right.
We lived there for 5 years.
That's awesome. You mentioned Highland Park on the new record.
Yeah.
Is that song based on?
I wrote that about like a friend.
Okay.
Yeah. About a buddy who was kind of going through some stuff. But I kind of like how like it can be like misconstrued as like, oh, is this like autobiographical?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I love that. It's
that's
cool.
That's the fun when you listen to a record, you start hearing things and like you have your press photo. That press photo is you on Figueroa. Is that a different Figueroa? There's a lot of Figueroas in California. But is that the Highland Park one?
It's totally the Highland Park one. Yeah. Okay, it's like, a lot of those. So like the label that put it out, Curation, it's like a very LA centric label, and he wanted all the photos to be shot up there.
Nice. That's awesome. I love that neighborhood, man. I enjoyed my time there, and
You lived down there, right?
For a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And then I just felt like for me LA was just like, I'm working all the time, I'm not like doing what I was like, I was thought I was going to go to shows. I thought I was going to network. Yeah. I thought this and this was going to happen. Yeah, and none of that happened. And now my advice to kids now is like, fuck that, dude. Just like grind on the internet and then things will happen. Like,
totally,
you
know,
you'll tour and you'll just keep just being consistent and putting stuff out, I think, is better than like, you have to move to LA, man. No, have to move to LA to like have a career.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I love LA though. I mean, like, it's,
I love LA.
We'll go back. I love it. we'll go back and, you know, check stuff out. Like, go to the parks or go to like a botanical garden or something like that.
Did you ever feel that pressure? Did you ever have friends in LA telling you, gotta come, dude, if you want to have a career, you gotta come down here, man. This is where it's happening.
Maybe a little bit. I mean, like, maybe more specifically when we were leaving.
Right.
They're like, what are you doing? Like, this is where it's at, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, I always tell people, it's like, we live in a town where you can like drive up and park in front of your house and get out and walk inside. And like, to me, like, that is worth its weight in gold. Man. Like, like in LA, you can't do that. You have to park like 4 or 5 blocks away from your house.
Yeah. You know, can't leave anything in your car.
Your groceries.
Right.
It's like 30 minutes to drive to the grocery store. People, you don't see your friends too often there, you know?
No.
Like, you're like, it's going to take 4 hours to get there, you know?
It's like, I never felt like more alone in such a massive city. Like,
it can be kind of isolating, man. Yeah.
And like, I just stayed in my neighborhood because I was like, oh, I'll just stay in Highland Park. Like, I don't need to go to Echo Park. Like, I have bars here. I got restaurants here. I could, you know.
Totally, man. But you know, it's like, I was up there yesterday. Like, you can it's a great place to visit for the day.
Oh, it's so sweet.
You know?
And they got a bunch of cool stuff after I moved here. I was like, oh, Homestead's awesome.
That's
like,
how
damn it. I was like watching them build it and now it's here. I'm like, I could have just eaten tacos here every day. Like, what the hell? Yeah. That's awesome, man. So when did, because then you started Parting Lines. Parting Lines happened with Tim. Is that project still active? Are you guys recording? Are you guys writing? What's the deal?
Like, it's, I think just because of like COVID and what have you, it's like been dialed down. I actually just went, I stopped by at Tim's house yesterday to pick up some records. So I'm kind of stoked to have some actually.
Nice.
It's been
records?
Some Parting Lines records. Cool. Yeah. But we have been talking about starting to write again and record. We're definitely going to do that. We just like the last thing we did, I mean, was we went on tour in Spain.
How was that?
Oh, it was awesome.
Really?
Really cool. Yeah.
Oh, I've never even thought about touring in Spain.
Oh, you'd love it.
Really?
Oh, it's amazing, man. It's such a beautiful country, beautiful people. And I mean, it's just aesthetically beautiful too, you know, it's just,
right.
But, so we went and did that and then kind of came back and then we didn't really have any shows booked and then bam, COVID hit.
Whoa,
and
it, yeah.
Like, oh, we had some shows booked for like 2020 and stuff like that, you know, but, that all went out the window. And then, also because like I live down here in Riverside and he lives in LA.
Mm.
So it's just kind of been one of those things. We haven't gotten to do it, but
was it nice to start writing with someone again versus just doing it yourself?
Well, I still wrote the songs, but Tim kind of did like the producing
And
like a lot of kind of the like arrangement ideas too. So it was nice to have a collaborator like that for sure. You know, like I would go in and do the guitars and the drums and then he would, and maybe like the bass or something. And then he would send me stuff with like keyboards and, you know, and the guitars and all that stuff and like things taken out and all that, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I was thinking like, I was trying to think of your guys' dynamic cause I could still hear you and your voice in those songs. But it was a little different. Were you trying to write different kind of stuff for that project?
Yeah, for sure. Like probably going more in like a pop way, you know?
Yeah.
I think I'm trying to think of a lot of like Taylor Swift at that time.
Right, probably. Right. So then there were plans to do the Trevor record alongside this Parting Line record?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like by the time we kind of got back from Spain, that was when it started to really kind of happen.
Okay.
The Brent, who runs Curation, it was also in Beachwood Sparks and things like that. And he's in a band called Gospel Beach.
Cool.
And I co-wrote songs with him for his last couple records and played like drums on their last record. And Johnny, who plays keyboards in Gospel Beach, was like, hey, come on in. Let's like record some songs. And it just kind of like snowballed from there. And we just kept doing it.
Are these songs you had like fresh, or are you still picking songs from your back catalog? Like, oh, I forgot about that one.
Those were kind of like an amalgamation of it all. Like I would say it was mostly new stuff.
Yeah,
for sure. But it was like some of it, like I'd say three or four were like half finished ideas, you know, and then just like, I want to flesh this out and see what happens, you know?
Do you release most things that you write, or is there still a back catalog of stuff you just never put out?
Oh, there's like tons of stuff. Yeah, for sure. Just like weird, zany ideas, unfinished ideas.
Okay, so unfinished to the point that you never even fully recorded them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it'll be like a verse and a chorus.
Right.
Something like that, you know? Oh. And then I just never got back to it. But, or also there's like stuff that like we recorded like for those sessions. There's a few songs actually that we recorded for those sessions that just didn't get released.
Right. Okay, so for this new record, for this new session, okay. Yeah. How long of a recording process was it to make this record?
Let's see. So fall 2019 to like spring 2020.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, spring 20.
Oh, I think we...
Previous stuff, I'm a little bit kind of more hands-on, you know, like it says interconnection is unstable. Can you see me?
Yeah, you were frozen for a second, but I think you're back.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more hands-on, so you know, saying like Tall Tales, there would be songs that maybe I would record most of the instruments, that type of thing, you know. And then in like Parting Lines, it was kind of half and half, you know.
Okay.
This record, I just like Brent kind of had this vision of like, you're gonna like let the other musicians come in and do what they do, and like we're gonna like work with that. And so it was kind of new. I'm not like a control freak by any, by the way, at all, but it was kind of nice actually to just like okay, let's see what happens, you know.
Yeah, my last record's the first time I ever did that. I was like, I wrote the songs, I'm done.
Yeah,
like, you guys shred it up. Like you guys are better than me. Do it. You know,
it's fun, man. Yeah. Cool, and it's cool to see like what comes out too. You know, it's like giving somebody else the paint. Like, this is the paint that I want on here, or something like that.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? You know.
Yeah, here's like the rough riff I had. Can you expand on it? Like, yeah. And then they do, and you're like, holy shit, that's amazing. Yeah.
So did you just play guitar and sing on the last record?
I just sang. I think I played keys once.
Oh, cool.
And everything else is just like, can you do that? Who can do it? Who could do it the best? Like, and like the whole thing was like, we want to walk into this like a Steely Dan record.
Oh, cool. You know,
no egos. Whoever can play the part plays the part. And I think there's like two different drummers on the record. There's just like, you know.
Did Jacob play some guitar on that? Or?
He did. Yeah, I had Jacob redo all my parts actually.
He's a shredder, man.
I was what like, dude, just make it sound way better than what I did. So that was nice too. Yeah, that was really cool. That was fun, man. How long did it take you to finish this record?
Yeah, so
the basic tracking, I should say.
Yeah, so I would go in and, so I should say like, first, what would happen is I'd go in and I'd do like, you know, the guitar, the vocal, the drum. I would even do bass. I would do like little like lead stuff. I would do that and like I sent it to Brent and he was just like, no, dude, that's not the deal that we're doing here, you know?
Okay.
So we kind of, then I just would go in and I would just do acoustic guitar, drums, maybe some percussion and do a scratch vocal.
Mm-hmm.
And then Johnny, who produced the record and like mixed it and all that stuff, he's like an amazing keyboardist. Like just, right. So he went and would do a lot of the piano and that stuff. And then we had people come in, this guy, Bob Glob, played bass.
Cool.
And he's played on like, you know, Jackson Browne records.
Whoa.
Just an incredible bass player. And
what kind of bass did he have? Did he have like a really old bass? Like what was his?
He has his own signature series.
Oh, cool.
I can't remember the brand, but yeah. I mean, he played bass on The Pretender.
Right.
You know, like he's a legend. He's such a killer bass player. And I love playing the bass, but like, just like what you were just saying, it's like, sometimes you just gotta like let the good bass play the bass, you know?
Yeah. Do your thing.
So we'll see it unfolding that way.
Do you think having someone who knows that style that you were trying to do, this Glenn Frey, Jackson Browne thing, like, do you think it really helped having that kind of bass player, someone who like actually knew these people? Do you think he added like, oh yeah, that's like exactly what, you know?
Yeah, I think and it just came naturally to him.
Right. He's like, I already know what to do.
Yeah. He's like, I know what you want. So I'm just, I know what you want because I played on it.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just going to do that.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
So yeah, he played bass and then, like Tim came in and played some guitar and some pedal steel. You know, we had all kinds of people come in. Eric from Fruit Bats and Pearl Charles and Casey Joe Hansing and stuff
like
that.
That's awesome. Oh, that's awesome. And so wait, how long did you say it ended up being spring, and how long was the basic tracking?
Oh yeah. Sorry, dude. it was just like, so probably from fall to like late winter.
Cool.
So around this time, I guess, if this is still winter.
Yeah,
February.
Oh, okay.
And then the Gospel Beach guys. So then Johnny and Brent, they actually went on tour in Europe, like right as COVID was hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there for like a month. And, so they went and did that. And then he came back and then he started mixing.
Hmm.
And then I went back in like kind of late spring just to like, kind of like, do some touch-up stuff.
Cool.
Like vocals and what have you. And there's my wife. Tanya, say hi.
Hi.
Hello.
It's Ruben.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh my God, a long time no here.
I know. Nice to see you again, or hear you again.
She was taking the kids to the park.
Oh, very cool. Was there a time that you didn't think this record was going to get done, especially with the COVID thing? Like, oh shit, we might not finish this thing.
Yeah, totally. 100%, man. And, but then like Brent just kind of like lit the fire. He's like, let's do it, man.
Right.
And so he's like, we got to have it. He kind of started setting like, you know, deadlines and stuff. And we just did it, you know?
Do you usually set deadlines, or is that something new to you?
For me, my deadline probably would have even been sooner.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like for me, I'm like, as soon as we finish, you know, at the end of the day, I'm like, let's mix it, you know?
Yeah.
But I think this kind of record was a little bit more like, let's like do like a rough mix and sit with it for a couple months and like see if we hear anything else and that type. So, you know, it was like the whole thing, I would say, was about probably 6 months.
Right.
You know?
And with this being like a solo, I guess it's like, it's your name. It's not like, is that scary to be like, this is my name, this is my record? Like, this isn't like a band that like I can like hide behind.
Yeah. It's super weird and super scary.
Oh.
Yeah, man. Cause like, you know, cause also the thing too is it's like, you know, before like maybe a little bit more to do kind of with like the production and like arrangements and what have you, you know?
Right.
And this time I took a little bit more of a back seat. So you have to kind of roll with any punches that might come your way, you know, and you get to also celebrate and enjoy all that stuff too. So But before, it's like, you're like, yeah, I made that choice. And like, right. That's the choice. I'm living with it. You know, I believe in that. And I believe in this record 100%.
Right.
You know, it's just a little bit different.
Before COVID, did you think you were going to tour this record? Were you going to have to get another band?
I thought so. Yeah. I thought we definitely would at least do like a tour of some kind. Probably not a long one. It's hard. It gets hard to do that when you have kids, right. You know, and you know, a day job and what have you. So,
right.
You know, I'm busy, but, you know, I definitely thought we would probably make it out there in some form.
Yeah, man. It's hard. It gets hard even when you're in a serious relationship to get on the road.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then you add another layer, kids. Yeah. That's even harder. Yeah. And then you add another layer, a job you can't quit. Like, which is why I've always stayed with these awful part-time jobs. Cause I'm like, all right, you're mad. I'm mad too. I gotta go. Like, I'll see you soon.
Yeah. Nice.
I know. How crazy. I think about all this stuff. I think as I just get older, I'm thinking about all that stuff now and like kids and I don't know. How do you balance it all? How do you balance the music and the family?
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, 100% it's family first.
Right.
You know, like 100%. Like I love playing music and it's, you know, a part of my life and it's been like such a giant part of my life. But like my family is like first always. Right. When River was younger and Tanya sang and played in Tall Tales too.
I remember.
So we would take River on the road, you know,
crazy.
Like the last Tall Tales show we ever played, we had a River like come up on stage and like, you know, she couldn't even really sing, but she was like, you know, singing, you know, and it was just like, that was kind of like her first 3 years of life, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, and that's fun and that's like super cool. And I feel like that's like important for kids to have that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, it's like, you got to make it like a healthy kind of thing too, you know?
Or do you think you'll, I feel like push is the wrong word, but do you think you'll encourage music on your daughter?
I'd like to. Yeah. Both of them. Both the girls.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. River, like we have this like baritone ukulele.
Cool.
I've just been kind of like putting it out for her to see it.
Yeah.
Just like, here's this.
You can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And she likes music a lot.
Cool.
She loves the Beatles, like
authentically
and truly. She really does love the Beatles, but she loves like pop music too, you know?
Yeah,
like
totally.
New stuff, which is just the sweetest, you know, it's the best.
Yeah. My thoughts are always like, you know, no one pushed me into music. My grandmother showed me how to try. She tried to show me how to play guitar, but like it didn't click. But like I always hear those stories of my friends who are like, oh, my parents made me do this. And I just got burnt out really young.
Yeah.
And I don't know. But then also I think about my experience in music and the long uphill battle of like being optimistic, but what am I doing with my life? I get nervous and I don't know if I'd ever want that future for my own kids. Cause knowing how difficult it made my life.
Totally.
Watching everyone get good jobs and watching everyone do this and this. And I'm like, when's the next show? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I feel you, man. Excuse me. What was your like intro into like being a musician?
Yeah, man. So, it started off when I was a kid, you know, it's like I saw Ricky Ricardo play drums on I Love Lucy. And I was like, that's sick. I want to play drums. And that, I think that just shows how little representation there was for Latinos in the arts. Like I was like, that's it. That's cool. And so I didn't play drums until I was like 12. And then by the time I was 15, I got a guitar and I started playing guitar. I was in a band when I was 14 with my cousins and I just like, I wanted to contribute.
Cool.
Yeah. So it was me. We all went to San Marcos. We all went to high school together, basically, except none of us could sing. We were so bad. But, you know, we'd play IV. We would play in Isla Vista a lot. I was 14 years old playing in Isla Vista. My cousin was 12.
Whoa.
My little cousin was 12.
Was there like an older cousin there?
Yeah, he was 18. He was the senior.
So he was the adult?
He was the only adult. He was the only one with the license too.
Place very debaucherous.
Right. My dad would have to come to the shows with us all the time.
Yeah.
He'd sit in the car just like, is it done? Like, yeah, it's done. Okay, let's go. Let's pack the car up. So he'd pack the car up with me. Like, there was a lot of I couldn't stay up past 10. So after our set, I'd have to leave.
Like, got to hang out, you know?
I don't know. I don't know how stoked he was, to be honest. Like, yeah, but those are all the times I really love. I look back, I'm like, wow, I can't believe I did that. And I guess it adds to my my lore. My, because every time I tell someone, like, you were an IV when you were 14, I was like, yeah, where else could we play? People thought we looked older. I don't know. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And so when I think about that, I think about those times, and then you think of the highlights, the shows that were, you know, big shows or whatever. It's just it trips me out sometimes to think that, like, oh, it started there, and, you know,
yeah,
now I'm playing X venue opening for so and so. It's like,
totally,
those are the kind of moments. What, when you think back on your time playing music, like, what's that moment for you? Like, oh my god, this started off as just like me and Seth, and now I'm playing, you know, this show. Or
honestly, like, oh man, it's like, it's hard to pinpoint. Well, I would say, like, kind of like a real big, I guess, catalyst for me, like, being like believing in my music, I guess, or believing in myself, was just by chance. Robin Hilton, I believe that's his name, from NPR, wrote about a song that I had, like, that I just like put up on the internet.
Yeah,
I don't even know how he found it, you know, and it was just like, I was like, oh. Oh, this is kind of cool. Like, somebody can like listen to it and enjoy it and like dig it, you know? And, that kind of, like, I feel was like an inspiration in a way to have me go, okay, like, I want to do more of this or something.
Yeah. Oh, like this.
Cause before that, it was totally just like fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was just like, it's still fun, but,
I have to remind myself that all the time. That's what's been like the last 2 years, is me reminding myself, this is supposed to be fun. Like, just have fun.
Yeah, man. That's the key ingredient, really.
It's hard because you gotta
channel that.
You get so locked into the industry side of shit and like trying to think so in such a strategic manner that you fucking lose sight of like the most important part. And I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast are just other people in bands, because I get their DMs and they're like, dude, so sick, you're talking. And it's like, and I see them and they're young and they're in bands. And it's like, you have to, I think, for the listeners, I should say, you have to remember that, man, because I got lost in the strategery and the backstabbing. Like, okay, if, you know, thinking people owe you shit, but they don't owe you anything. It's just like, it's so crazy.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, man. And it's like, it's not about that. And it's not about like competing at all.
Right.
I mean, like, that's something I feel like I've never enjoyed that, you know, like seeing that in people or whatever, you know. It's like, it's not this baseball, you know what I mean?
Right.
This is like art, you know?
I think that kind of stems from the lack of jobs, decades. Like, there's only so many opening gigs or so 100%. Many. But
true.
I think with the internet, the way the internet is developing now, is that like there's an audience for everyone. Like, I don't know. It's like two shows can happen in the same city and they can both do well. And I've seen that happen. My show does well, and there's a show around the corner that's also doing well. Like, there's enough for everyone. So I think that's what's kind of killed a lot of that. Hopefully it's killed a lot of that competitive drive. Yeah.
I forgot about that. Like, playing shows and like, being like, oh yeah, there's 10 shows happening tonight. hopefully we get some of the trickle down from that.
Oh my god, I played in Boise and then there was like three people there, and the guy was like, yeah, Wolf Parade's playing across the street. I'm like, yeah, it still happens, like in small cities, like it still happens. Santa Barbara's one of those places too. Like, if something's happening at the Bowl in Santa Barbara, that's like the whole city. Then no one's shows are gonna do well.
Where are the all ages places in Santa Barbara?
Oh no, there's none. Now, Velvet Jones was doing all ages shows.
Yeah.
And they closed. This is pre-corona. They closed pre-corona. I think the owner, Craig, was just done. He was like, I'm done. Oh, yeah. But there is a new venue there. And I drove by because I don't really go downtown. I just like me and my girlfriend, we just like drive and look and see the crazy people out in the street. I don't know how you're doing it. I'm not as brave as you guys. But there is a band. There is a band playing on the street.
Oh, cool, man.
So there, it's like, you know, some older dudes like in a blues band, like playing some blues, but
yeah, good for them.
It's tight. I was like, that's sick. Like, if it's there, if you want to play, it's there, but I just don't have the want to play on the street like that. And I feel like if I did announce something like that, it could get out of hand and too many people would show up, which is a good and bad thing.
Have you during COVID at all, have you done any like in front of people shows or at all?
Oh no. Okay. I did one live stream thing on my Instagram.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've done a few of those. Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about those live stream shows?
Well, I haven't done one in a while. And by a while, I think I mean like 2 months or something.
Okay.
But I was kind of doing them frequently, not frequently. I probably did like, you know, 7 or 8 during 2020. And it, you know, it, like playing music under my name is so new.
Right.
You know, and I was like putting a record out. Like, I'm like, I gotta do something. You know what I mean? Like, I can't just like be like, hey,
record release show.
If you find me, buy my record, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I had to make some kind of like connection, like not like a big show playing person. Mm.
You're right.
I think I enjoy the process of like writing songs and recording much more, you know?
Right.
I ended up doing some of this and I play one show. It was like socially distanced outside in like Orange County.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Where else?
It's cool. But you know, people, I think they had to have their temperatures checked and like, I think they had to wear masks or masks were either encouraged or required. I can't remember, nobody really wore any. And that was before the,
of course, big
surge. That was before the big surge.
Oh, really? Before,
that was like early November.
Early November, right before the holidays. Yeah. That's crazy. I heard the temperature thing's kind of silly. Like, if your temperature's that high, you're pretty sick, dude.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You should not be outside. Like, and most people I know, I know two people have gotten corona, and they're like, dude, yeah, if your temperature's that high, you don't want to get out of bed, dude. Like,
yeah. So I'm none of you. I'm none of you.
Have you?
That's like church with a guy who got it, or I mean, you know, I don't know. Just rumor has it.
Right.
And then some people, you know, through just hearing at work and what have you, you know, but nobody in like my family, have any friends? Oh, actually I have a couple friends on the East Coast that got it.
Oh.
But like mostly like what I've heard is it's like, you know, mostly it's kind of, you don't get that sick,
right?
You know, but or it's either you don't get that sick or you get like really sick,
really sick.
And
yeah,
there's like no in between, I feel.
Yeah, even my friends who I have my two friends and they both didn't get that sick, but they said even not that sick is still pretty awful. Like,
the
light way is still pretty bad. Yeah,
you don't want to mess around, you know?
Nah, man, it's
like,
crazy.
You gotta be like as safe and respectful as you can for everybody.
Is your daughter the age of going to preschool or kindergarten?
So I have.
Is there a pressure for her to go to school?
Yeah, I mean, like they're gonna start back this month doing hybrid. Yeah, she's just been online, you know, since last year.
Crazy. What grade is she in?
She's in third.
Oh, okay. Okay, so she's kind of. She kind of knows the motions of regular school.
100%.
Right.
She definitely does. Excuse me.
It's okay.
She's kind of introverted slightly, but like, she's also like, she can be extroverted though too. She's kind of like me.
Right. Yeah.
So she is a little, she has the itch to go back.
Right.
You know? But she also is kind of fine, like not going back.
Right.
My little one who has not go to school, she was in daycare before COVID hit, she was in daycare for like 2 months.
Mm.
So she kind of got a taste of it, and she's way extroverted. She's like social. She's just like the sweetest.
She loves it.
Yep. And so she's like, and she's going to actually be going back to daycare here pretty soon. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So everybody's kind of like, you know, working with the guidelines and I think trying to be safe and, you know, life has to go on at some point. You know?
Some point. Yeah. Yeah. My little sister's going back to junior high. And then my oldest younger sister is a senior in high school this year. And it's just just gone. Your senior year, completely gone. Like, senior year was the only year I liked.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm out of here. Let's just enjoy the time we have left.
Did she go to the school that you went to?
No, she goes to a private school.
Oh.
So, but like, you know, the private school, they can do whatever they want, and they've had multiple COVID outbreaks, but she's still been staying home because my mom's like, I don't care. You can stay home. You know what to do. Yeah. Yeah. So crazy. Oh man. Introverted and extroverted. That's a great place to go. How is that, you know, I guess you have a little split of both, but do you think it's helped you or has it hurt you to be introverted and trying to hop on stage? Do you feel like you have to flip it on? That's when you have to flip it on?
For sure.
Yeah.
That's like kind of like the only place that I flip it on.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of I try to be thoughtful when I speak, you know, and so it might come across as quiet or something, you know? When I get on stage, you know, I'm a little bit freed up from that or something, you know, I don't know.
Are you nervous before you get on the stage?
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Even now, even still?
Always. Yeah. Always. I have a little bit of stage fright. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And how did you overcome that?
Less people there. I feel it's more intensified.
Oh yeah. Yeah. When there's less people. Yeah. It sucks.
It's like,
absolutely brutal.
Everybody can see me. The two people in the back can see me. You know?
Do you think it was worse when you were 18?
I think it's actually gotten worse.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's gotten worse over time. Like, maybe when I was younger, I felt like there wasn't much to lose, you know? And then, you know, maybe over time, I feel like there's been like more of a need. Maybe I'm just get caught up in my head too much.
Totally.
You know?
Because if you think about it, like a show when you're 18, it's like, okay, that's how I spent my day. A show when you're in your 30s, it's like babysitter, time off.
Yeah, man.
Like, yeah, there's just so much more that goes into it than just playing a show and then,
oh, you know. Goodness. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, okay. You know, I remember like towards the end of Tall Tales, like I was like the, you know, I had the van, you know, so I was like, I got to pick up the band members.
Right.
I usually brought my drums. I would bring like the bass in. I would bring like the stuff just to make it kind of easier because we weren't making like a lot of money, you know, so it was like, you know, any money that we made, I just like gave it to everybody and, you know, just like I tried to just make it as easy as possible for everybody. And when you're doing that, I think it's can get a little bit stressful.
And having 9 people in the band, like it's not very scalable. Yeah. It's not very
wasn't the smartest choice at sometimes, but it made it definitely, you know, maybe looking back, it maybe made me feel less intense.
Alone.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably, we're having a little bit of a therapy session here, but that's probably why I think. Yeah.
Right. It helped with the nervousness.
The nerves. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
And I'm sure sound guys loved seeing your band. They're like, you need 3 mics, 3 vocal mics. Fuck.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. They did not like it. It's funny. I remember a friend of mine one time was like, I learned this a long time ago. Give the sound man, slip him a 20.
Really?
Did you ever do that?
No, I've never done that.
Okay, I've never done it either.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine told me that one time and I always kind of like considered it because I was like, oh, I mean that makes sense. You know, like I don't know how much a sound person makes.
I think like $100.
They make more than the artist, I've always assumed.
Yeah, they for sure get paid. We might get paid.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, like I can kind of dig that. I think that's a cool.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I wonder if that would work, man. Yes, next tour, I'm just gonna start bringing like 20
or something, or like care a little bit more about your set, maybe.
Right, like, hey, here's $20. You know, yeah. Like, don't tune out. Like, pay attention. Yeah. I need the monitor loud. Like, that's something too. Like, that I feel like a lot of bands or a lot of people don't talk about is like getting comfortable with monitors, especially if you're coming from a DIY home house show vibe to finally playing with monitors, like. Do you know what exactly you like in the monitor now, or does it change at every venue for, you know?
I think it depends also on the band lineup too.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like who's playing. But I think generally, I like to hear my voice,
right.
You know, got to hear that, you know, to hear if you're on and what have you.
Right.
And then, I like to hear my guitar, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Not to sound like it's all about me, but those are helpful, you know what I mean? Because right. It's usually like in the back behind you, so you got to hear those things. Then I like to hear like the other guitars as well, and maybe a little bass. Drums, I don't really feel like I need to hear anything.
Yeah, they're usually pretty loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just
other vocals, other vocals.
Those, oh, yeah, that's
got to go up.
That's got to go up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think about that stuff, man, because it took a long time for me to realize like that, like on stage etiquette too, of like, and I would watch other bands do it because I was like, let me see how they're doing this. And then it's like, they all just, you know, pick up the hand. Okay. And then when you have enough, you put your hand down. I was like, that's clean. I like that. That's like uniform. And I feel like that helps out sound people. It just speeds up the process. So I definitely have incorporated that. I was like, just raise your hand. When you know, have what you have, if you have too much, you know, whatever. But
no,
like,
that's cool.
Yeah.
For me, what I used to do was, cause it's kind of, cause I kind of care about this more than monitors, is I care about how it sounds in the house.
Right.
So, like, I used to have like the band play and then like, I would go out in the room and like hear it. I don't know if that bothered the sound person, but it, you know what I mean? It's just like,
he's like, you don't trust me.
Yeah. But like, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of the thing that I would care about the most a little bit.
Oh, I was talking to a sound guy once and I was like, yeah, man, I'm thinking about getting one of those Boss like vocal like effects thing so I can I can control how much reverb or whatever I have. He's like, I hate those things, man. Most of the time you guys think you know what you want and you don't actually know what sounds good. I was like, I don't think you know what sounds good. Like, and this was the time where it was like early 2010s where everything was just reverbed out.
Oh yeah.
It was just like, that was the time of reverb.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted, but no sound guy wanted to crank the reverb that much. I'm like, just trust me. This is what I want.
Yeah.
That one, Nice to Meet You by Tall Tales and the Silver Linings. One of those records that has a lot of reverb on it. That was like around that time. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I had that on, actually listened to the record the other day. There's a few songs on there I wanted to talk about. Dyed in the Wool. Obviously, that one, I think, in my opinion, I think it did really well for that band. And I loved it. You guys played it a bunch. Like, you know, how do you feel about that record looking back on it?
I feel like it was kind of like our flagship for like transitioning from being like a 805 band into like more of an LA kind of band. And it was also like a moment that was like a time where there's like a year plus where I didn't play guitar. I just sang.
That's right.
Yeah. 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 And it's funny. But it was like, that was just like a time, you know, I feel that when I think about that record,
was that more comfortable for you just to have the mic in your hand?
It was just like, I think it was like me challenging myself.
Right.
You know, kind of just how we were talking about earlier about, you know, nervous system and what have you. It was like a challenge and it was like fun. It made it fun, you know?
Yeah, I felt like you were like the conductor of that band because you didn't have a guitar in your hand, so you were able to like cue the ending and...
Yeah. A lot of cues, you know.
That's what I noticed.
Like, yeah, during that time, yeah. And then shortly after that, I just like had to pick up the guitar again because I missed it. And then I started kind of doing like a little bit more guitar oriented things, like weaving and what have you, you know?
That's great, man. Yeah, the cues. So were there defined endings, or were they always waiting on you to be like, all right, last one?
I'd say it's a mix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of depending on the night. I think like a song like Died in the Wool, we just played it from start to finish, you know, how it would every night. But then there was like, you know, things a little bit more open-ended.
Mm. And then the other one I love off that record is, was it In the Way I Love You?
Oh yeah, Way You Do.
No, The Way You Do, the first lyric, In the Way I Love You.
Yeah,
uh-huh. That's a great one, man. How did you write that song? That song is so fucking good.
Thank you, dude. Yeah, man, it just like, you know, Tanya is probably like my muse, you know?
Right.
That's a Tanya song. There's always a few every record, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say that's a...
This is a struggle that I'm dealing with right now. Like writing, because, you know, we usually dig from like, our bad experiences, relationships, or whatever. How is it to write about your good experiences in relationships? I feel like my whole head, I was like, people don't want to hear about my stable, fucking happy relationship. Like, that's not exciting. That's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just like, she always brings that out in me.
Right.
You know, we've been together for 17 years. Wow. You know, I met her when I was 20, and we got married when I was 21. So we've been married a long time. And, you know, it's always there, you know, it's just constantly every day. I'm so thankful.
Wow. That's awesome.
And so it just, you know, brings it out. But I love that other stuff too. You know, I love the, like, you know, like the Joni Mitchell, Court and Spark, you know, that cynicism about like just how people are dumb.
I know. Yeah, it's so nice, but it's like I don't have any material to draw from. For the last like 3 years I've been in my relationship and I just have nothing bad to say. So I'm just like,
Man, it's a celebration. It's like, you know, we should, you know, like the Rolling Stones, one of my favorite bands. They've been basically writing about the same stuff for, you know, 50 years.
True. It's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I always point to McCartney, Ram, you know, Eat at Home, like songs like that. I'm like, okay, cool. So you can like talk about your life.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man.
A domesticated life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to probably annoy people too.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's going to annoy McCartney fan.
It's going to annoy young people.
McCartney. I don't get it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
I just think it would annoy young people who are still finding their way, still finding their love, and they don't want to hear about how good your life is going.
I get it.
Yeah, I get it. And I get it because I was that guy. I was that guy once. Yeah. I just had a whole conversation with my girlfriend on the phone about music reviewers and how I really think the music review is for young people who haven't really made their mind up yet. They don't really know what they like and they're looking for validation.
Yeah.
Where when I listen to a record now, I don't give a fuck if a reviewer didn't like it or not. Like,
dude, some of my favorite records of all time were like panned.
Yeah.
Like, I something like Late for the Sky by Jackson Browne, you know?
Right.
I didn't like that record when it came out and it's mind blowing to me. Or like a Ram.
Ram.
People didn't like that record. Like, what?
Yeah.
People crazy to me.
And then when people ask Paul McCartney about Ram now, he's like, oh, people like that record? We're like, yes, we love it. He's like, he still thinks no one likes it. So he doesn't play anything off of it.
Poor guy. Poor Paul.
The new one is Back to the Egg. Paul McCartney Wings, Back to the Egg. And it has that one song on it. Ooh, baby, you couldn't have done a west.
Oh, you're saying the new Ram is Back to the Egg?
Yeah. Now people are rediscovering that album.
I've seen people on a Wings trip. Did you listen to the new Paul record?
I did. I liked it.
You liked it? Okay.
What'd you think of it?
I think it's pretty good. I love Paul.
Yeah.
Paul's like my favorite Beatle, but.
Right.
It was like, you know, I mean, he can't do any wrong, but
no. I explained it to Ron Sexsmith that, like, I'm just satisfied that there is, that he's still here, and that I'm not looking, I don't look at him, I don't judge him the way I would judge a new record from any other band. It's like, good, more Paul, I'll take it. Like,
okay. That's a good, that's a healthy way of looking at it. Yeah.
I was like, Ron didn't have a great, he was like, oh yeah, I heard it. I was like, what'd you think? He's like, yeah, it was cool. I was like, yeah, but that's what I want. It was cool. Like, it was fine. Like,
you've got some McCartney stylings there on Sexsmith.
His new record, I told him, I was like, your new record is the McCartney album I wanted.
Rad.
And cool. He was just like, oh, thanks. I was like, cool. I know. I agree. If you're looking, but even Paul doesn't even want to write shit like that anymore. He doesn't want to write like Beatles-y music. He even said it.
He's like listening to like too much kind of like modern hip hop or something like
right,
that.
Like he's trying to fit in.
Like, I'm just going to repeat this kind of like melody over and over again or something, you know? And it's like, man, he is one of the greats when it comes to melody, you know?
Let him do his thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I was so excited, because I was like, oh, good. Maybe there won't be extra hands on it. Because his last record before this one felt like there was a lot of hands on it.
Yeah.
And he should just do what he does. And that's why I was excited about 3. And, but you know, yeah, I'm just happy there's a new.
Yeah. Like
just like we still have Jackson Browne. He's still around.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, I think growing up in Santa Barbara, it's like kind of weird because he played the Bowl every year.
Yeah.
And kind of just like you see the Bowl lineup, you're like, Jackson Browne again. But like you get older and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I wish I actually would have went to those shows.
Super cool, like exposure, I feel.
Him and Santana.
Who else was there?
Santana. He would come every year to the point I was like, again? Like, fuck. But I don't know. This record is obviously getting comparisons to like Jackson Browne and Glenn Frey. Were these people, obviously you grew up listening to, but like around the time of making the record, were you on a big Glenn Frey, Jackson Browne kick more so than usual?
I feel like I've always been.
Okay.
My whole life. You know what I mean? Like, it's definitely something that I grew up with, like in the house, especially Late for the Sky. Like, my mom played that. And like the Eagles, of course.
Right.
It's just kind of just part of the vernacular, you know?
Right.
But yeah, man. Like, I think it was like, I think Brent and Johnny just saw that and they're like, let's do it. Right. You want to do it? Let's do it. You
let's
know?
Commit to that. Yeah,
exactly. And that was kind of like the ethos for the record.
Wow. Yeah. The Eagles are great. That's great. Like, that's good touring music.
I love the Eagles, man.
It's so fun.
I hate on them. I love them.
Dude, I'm new to the Eagles. Like, it took me a very long time to like finally admit that I like the, maybe it comes with age. Maybe it's just something as you get older, you kind of get it now. But like them, Bruce Springsteen, there's like a few lists of artists that I'm like, oh, I get it now. And it took me a while.
Oh yeah.
And there's something about, just touring, listening to the Eagles. And the thing with the Eagles that I didn't get, there's all these different sounds and like they grew and they evolved so much that you're like, oh, that's an Eagles song. Oh, that other song is an Eagles song. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, man.
Oh man, such a big inspiration.
Yeah, what great songwriters, what cool like production, you know, thoughtful, super thoughtful production. And the harmonies obviously are just insane.
Did you watch that documentary that was on Netflix for a while?
Yeah.
The 6 hour, it's like I thought it was done. I didn't realize there was a whole nother 3 hours that like went into their solo work.
Part three,
I'm like, oh shit, this is huge. This is massive, massive documentary, man.
Yeah, they were. It would probably be hard to be in that band, obviously. Right. You know, that's why they broke up. You know.
Right. Yeah. A lot of different personalities. They're all. They were all frontmen. Like.
Yeah, except for like Bernie Ledden.
Oh, that's right.
And Randy Meisner seems like such a sweet, gentle dude. You know.
Yeah. He was like the one who didn't even. He was like, I'm done. He had like the one hit and he was like, that's too much exposure for me. This is
what a song though, you know?
I know. It's so funny watching him sing those high notes. Like, it's classic. I love it.
What a song.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I feel like when I was a kid, my grandma actually had like the Eagles' greatest hits, you know, the first volume one, you know, volume one, volume two.
That's right.
And we, so like, my grandma, I come from like French immigrants who moved to California, and they were like ranchers. And so I lived like in like a, you know, like a tiny house out in like Temecula area. Mm-hmm. And so it just, the Eagles always like remind me of that, you know,
time,
like having through the country, you know, listening to the Eagles. It's like it's very nostalgic to me.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. And, were there any other influences? Cause I feel like everyone's going to talk to you about those two groups, but is there one that might shock us? Like, I was actually listening to a lot of this while making this record.
I think like those were like kind of the big inspos, but like, you know, like a little bit of Bread maybe.
Yeah.
There. A little bit of Burt.
Right.
You know, that type of stuff, that kind of like major seventh stuff, you know, trying to think here, what else did we, you know, and then there was like the kind of like non-musical inspirations, right. You know, like my family,
right,
friends, stories. Well, I tried to kind of step out a little bit and like with some of the songs and make it a little like try to like do more kind of storytelling on right. some of them, you know. I had never really done that before, like taking information from somebody and turning that into a song. Do you ever do that?
I haven't really stepped into the world of storytelling. It's kind of just like this line fits the melody and that works. And is that how you usually go about it? This line fits the melody, or, you know,
I would think like, honestly, it's just like me like sitting down with like a guitar and just like clearing my head, you know, and just being like, oh, that sounds cool. Okay. I'm going to like, that's where I'm going to start, you know, and kind of building from that. And then if you get lucky, then my favorites are the ones that just happened in like one sitting.
Right.
You know what I mean? The best. You don't have to go back and fix them. But sometimes you go back and you fix them and they become, you know,
good songs. Yeah. Awesome. Can you think of a time? I feel like Died in the Wool is one of those songs that like came really quickly.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like just a morning. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, like the, that like was the thing. It was just a guitar riff. And then I was like, okay, what would go under that? What chords? And then from there, it was just put it together.
I think my old band members would also be upset if I didn't bring up Moonlight, because that was also another song that we listened to all the time.
Oh, rad, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that song is like a drive from Santa Barbara to Ventura.
Oh yeah.
Like that's really what that kind of is to me, you know, like
cool.
A very specific thing. Like, in, I feel like people in the 805 would know what that means, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. That like drive.
You don't see that anywhere else really in the world, you know?
Have you ever taken the train?
I haven't.
That's really nice, man. Cause that gets you over to that next layer. And like, you don't even see the street. It's just all water. It's so cool. I've done that train ride a lot.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's fun.
Wait, have you spent some time in Ventura or just?
For the most part, like, my girlfriend lives in Westlake. And okay. There's a time where I didn't have a car. So I would take the train from Santa Barbara to Westlake to Simi Valley. And she'd pick me up in Simi.
Cool. Yeah. Rad.
And then there's a time where I was in LA, but I didn't have a car, so I was also taking the train from, you know, I can't remember the station, the closest one to Highland Park, and then to Santa Barbara too. So
closest one to Highland Park, I don't know, Glendale.
Yeah, Glendale.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah, Glendale. Yeah, it drops you off in Glendale, then I would take an Uber. Uber was like $5, very cheap, and I was like, this is awesome.
Cool,
super cool. Man, yeah. Okay, we can start. We've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes. We can start wrapping this up. What are your predictions, man?
For the world?
For the world. When do you see us playing shows again? Are you, you know, are you eager? Are you excited?
I think it's coming up.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's coming up, man. Like, you know, the numbers in California seem to be going down, you know? Which is nice to see. I think like we have you know, oh, I just read the other day, 1 in 7 people have gotten the vaccination.
Cool.
I mean, I don't know where people are at on that, but
yeah, you know, we're getting close.
Yeah. You know, I think the more that we just can kind of continue, I don't like that phrase, the new normal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I don't think that we should get adjusted to this. I think we should just like continue to like be diligent and, you know, do what we can to be kind to one another, right. You know, and if that means like, you know, wearing a mask when you're in the supermarket, then just do it, you know?
Right.
So I think we should do that. And I think the more we do that, then maybe this year, you know, yeah. I think summer we'll probably start seeing shows.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking too. Summer, the venues are maybe half capacity with some masks, or maybe we're playing a small bar or a small thing outside.
Yeah.
I think it can start happening. Yeah.
I mean, why do we need to even be like crowded next to each other anyway?
Right.
I mean, like, you know?
Yeah, I know. The wheels are in motion for me. Like, I definitely want to throw like a back, like, we're back, Santa Barbara, we're back kind of show. Like, yeah,
that's cool.
And hopefully try and help one of the venues, like, you know, well, we just have like Soho left. So,
yeah, I love Soho. That's a cool spot.
Yeah, that's like it. So, I'll probably throw a show there and like try and, you know, they make a lot of money at the bar. So, I think they'll be fine, but like, make more money at the bar than I do playing. So,
maybe that'll be different.
Hopefully. Cool, man. What's the best way for people to support you in this moment?
I would say go buy the record over at Curation. You can go to their Bandcamp or you can go to their website. Hi, Brent, if you're listening to this. and yeah, man, do that. You know, I'm on Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. I don't know if that,
how can they find you? It's just your name, Trevor Bell Jimenez.
Yeah. Trevor Bell Jimenez. Cool. Yeah. On Instagram. And, I don't really go on Facebook that much these days, but every once in a while I do.
It's on its way out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, like, you know, it's all, you know, it has its perks too, you know?
Yeah. The only thing I saw it was like valuable for was like the events, the Facebook events. That was it. Yeah. So if Instagram does Instagram events, it's done. That's like, why would I ever focus on Facebook ever again?
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I'm there. I'm out there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, dude, thanks so much for talking to me.
God bless.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Peace.